Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be, and we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
From time to time, no attention is paid to mine. I feel for you, not just for me. My heart beats on. Why can't you see? Don't steal my thunder, don't break
from Oneida singer-songwriter Joanne Shenandoah, from Canyon Records CD Volume 2, Voices Across the Canyon. That very special song was entitled Mother Earth Speaks. Ashkwe, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. In today's program, we are honored to share a conversation with environmental community and peace activist Joy Ezell. Joy shares Yat-Kitishi Native Center's concern for protecting Mother Earth and promoting environmental social justice. Joy Ezell's activism exemplifies the important ethic of thinking globally and acting locally. Some of the issues she is fighting with her community organization include environmental, economic, and social impacts of the multinational corporation PG&E Buckeye Paper Mill, a proposed 800-megawatt coal-fired power plant, and United States military plans to locate a cruise missile bombing range in her area. These and other issues are topics of today's conversation when Joy visited us here at Yat-Kitishi Native Center. Yat-Kitishi Native Center's concern for protecting Mother Earth and the well-being of all life, in keeping with the indigenous ethic of caring for future generations, is why we are honored to be part of the worldwide environmental justice anti-globalization movement. Most every Wolf Mountain Radio program focuses on some aspect of defending our biosphere, as well as promoting sovereignty and self-determination of traditional cultures around the world. I personally have had the honor, over the past 35 years, to see firsthand and fight against many cases of environmental and social injustices in different parts of the globe. In my travels, I have met many fine and courageous people who are working to create a better world. Each Earth Warrior I've met renews my energy to continue to defend Mother Earth. Joy Ezell is one such friend. Joy Ezell and I share a similar background and experiences as Earth Justice activists. We both grew up in rural areas where agriculture and forestry dominate the political and economic society. Like feudal kingdoms, agribusiness and forest industries rule the region. Anyone who questions those dragons does so under great threat. As a forest ecologist who has spent much of my life fighting forest industries around the world who destroy and pollute traditional cultures and ecosystems, Joy Ezell's battle against the Buckeye Pulp and Paper Mill is particularly special to me. This company is responsible for serious environmental health impacts from their poisonous discharge effluents that contaminate the region's creeks and rivers and poison underground aquifer needed for drinking water. The mill also is the engine that drives the excessive and unsustainable cutting down of forests, raping the land. Historically, the landscape of the region now called North Florida, where Joy lives, was a beautiful ecosystem with a rich diversity of plant and animal species. Variations in topography, soil types, and hydrology created a unique watershed. It was first home to ancient culture peoples, such as the Apalaches, Tallahassees, Timucuas, and other tribal nations who lived in peace with nature. The arrival of Spanish explorers to the so-called New World did have an impact to the land, but the forest and wet prairie creek environment was still able to survive. Southeast Indians, who are now known as Florida Seminoles and Yuchi Creeks, for generations lived in harmony with this land. Early white settlers, like Joy Ezell's family, found the region a near paradise. Large cypress trees and longleaf pine, hardwood hammocks, marshes, creeks, and freshwater springs allowed rural communities to flourish. Coastal areas had the bounty of the Gulf of Mexico. Now, this once beautiful area, like so many places around the world, is under assault. This biologically fragile area is quickly being destroyed. The unique old-growth forests have been cut down to feed the ever-demanding pulp and paper industry's greed for timber. PG&E's Buckeye Mill is like a giant vacuum cleaner sucking up the forests. It leaves a scared landscape. So-called reforestation is nothing more than agro-industrial plantations, monoculture tree farms, which depend upon heavy imports of chemical fertilizers, herbicides, and insecticides now predominantly the landscape. Wiped out are the unique species of fauna and flora that once supported a diverse variety of wildlife. Hazardous waste such as highly toxic dioxins, which are carcinogenic and mutagenic poisons, spew out from the Buckeye paper plant. These poisons greatly impact animal, plant, and human health. I first met Joy Ezell at a conference focusing on dioxin more than a decade ago. The conference, sponsored by the great citizen activist organization, Center for Health, Environment, and Justice, documented testimony from many grassroots groups that were and continue to battle corporate polluters. This great environmental justice organization, Center for Health, Environment, and Justice, under the leadership of our friend Lois Gibbs, still helps communities around the nation fight toxic waste sites. Lois, by the way, organized the Love Canal campaign against the infamous Hooker Chemical Company that contaminated her neighborhood in the 1970s. Not too long ago, I had the privilege to be a speaker with Lois Gibbs again at the 25th anniversary Legal Environmental Action Foundation Environmental Justice Conference in Tallahassee, Florida. On my way there, I had the opportunity to again visit the Buckeye plant to witness the paper mill's pollution. The situation that I have briefly described exemplifies many places throughout the world which are under attack by multinational corporations and government land use plans. While my conversation with Joy Ezell focuses on the region now called North Florida, the issues facing her community could be nearly anywhere in the world. Florida, in many ways, is like a so-called third world country. Much of the state is run by a government corporate elite partnership. Forest industries, such as in Joy's Taylor County, phosphate mining in central Florida, or agribusinesses such as sugarcane, citrus, vegetables, and even cattle ranching in the region where I live, not to mention unsustainable urbanization, are greatly impacting the environment and human societies. It is also important to remember that Florida is still Dixieland, the Deep South. While there has been some cosmetic change in relations between the races, socioeconomic differences and perhaps more subtle segregation still exists, especially in the region where Joy Ezell is from. This makes her activism very special and very important. Yad Kiddushi Native Center is privileged to have Joy Ezell on our program today. Welcome, Joy Ezell. In our conversation, I would like for you to share a little bit of personal background about your experience growing up in rural America, rural Florida. You have a very interesting business card underneath your name. It says environmental activist, the organization HOPE, Help Our Polluted Environment. But I know you also share a lot of common concerns and experiences and even education about rural community development and agriculture, as I did. Would you please share some of your background in agriculture and rural community development, how you worked for chemical companies as a pesticide sales person after college, and that was really the catalyst that got you thinking and got you to become an environmental activist.
Grew up in Perry, Florida, up in Taylor County, up in North Florida. Grew up on a farm, went off to school and studied agricultural business, and went to work for a chemical company and sold some of the worst agricultural chemicals that there were known to man, some FMC Ag Chemicals. This is the company that I worked for first. So I got to learn a whole lot about different kinds of chemicals and what they did, and I was afraid that I was ruining the environment. And this was way back in the 70s now, so it was a long time ago. I got really worried about what I was doing about the environment, and I thought that I was doing the wrong thing. And so I went back to school and got my master's, and unfortunately I went to work for another chemical company and sold even worse chemicals than I did to start off with. But it taught me a whole lot, because when I moved back home in 1981, first thing my grandmother told me was that the water was polluted at home in Taylor County. And I said, what are you talking about, Mama? And she said, well, Buckeye's in the water. You know, you can't drink the water down here anymore because it's got Buckeye. And what she meant was the paper mill effluent was in the water, that they had contaminated the aquifer. And so, consequently, our well water was contaminated. I couldn't believe that nobody was, you know, raising all kinds of holy hell about it, but nobody was saying a word. It was very, very a quiet thing, and only really a very few people actually knew about it. So I started asking questions, and I found out that some of those chemicals that were in our water were very similar to some of the chemicals that I had been selling for all those years. My son was about 12 years old at that time, and his name was Trey. And every day when I took him to school or took him back home from school, we had to cross the Fen Holloway River, and that's the river that's so polluted from the mill. And he would look at me and he would say, Mama, why don't you make them clean up that river? It's so nasty, it's so black, and it's so ugly, it's so polluted. And, you know, kids think you can do everything in the world, and I just kind of passed it off for a while there, and I said, yeah, sure, Trey, you know, I'll get to that. That'll be my next project. He kept on at me until I really did get interested in it. So I started asking questions. I made a trip to Tallahassee. Back then to the DER, and of course they didn't want to talk to me, and I went and made a trip up to Atlanta to the EPA, and they pretty much wanted to just brush me aside and get me out of there. The more I learned, the more upset I became, and the more convinced I was that we had a really, really bad problem in Taylor County with the river. So that's what got me started on all my environmental work. I found out that I remember the day in 1986 that I found out that the dioxin that was being sent out from the mill in the effluent was exactly the same chemical as Agent Orange. And that was a very depressing day for me, because back then there was hardly anybody for me to talk to at home about that kind of thing. You know, nobody wanted to talk to me about it. It was a taboo subject in Taylor County. You just didn't criticize the mill because that was where everybody worked. The main source of income for people there, the only big employer in the county. And you just didn't really want to criticize them very much, or you'd be blacklisted. And when I finally did sort of come out of the closet about it and become vocal about it, the local paper called me an armed radical environmental terrorist. And when they called me that, I knew I was doing the right thing. I knew I was making points and doing what I should be doing. I was on the right track. I met Onis years ago. We've been to several environmental meetings together. We were at the dioxin meeting in Tallahassee years ago together. We were both at the Cassini demonstration back in 89. We've been to several different kinds of environmental and peace meetings through the years, and I'm so pleased to be with y'all today.
I was thinking about my own personal experiences growing up in rural county area, was now called the state of Maine, where we have very similar monsters, pulp and paper mills as well. So what you are saying has resonates with me personally, and I could tell you some stories about the culpability of the U.S. Environmental Pollution Agency, as I call the EPA, and the state of Maine's environmental agency. Would you talk a little bit more about the relationship and connection with the Federal Environmental Protection Agency and the state's environmental agency, and how I would say misled the citizens of North Florida?
Well, we call the EPA the Environmental Procrastination Agency, and we call the DEP Don't Expect Protection, because they do not protect the people or the environment. They're not doing their jobs. We are paying your tax money into them, and they're not doing what they're supposed to do. Back in 1947, the state of Florida legislature actually passed a law that said the Fen Holloway River was an industrial river, and that law is still on the books. We've managed through the years to get the Environmental Regulation Commission to say that the river is a Class 3 river, which means that it is supposed to be fishable and swimmable, but to this day the Fen Holloway is still not fishable nor swimmable. The EPA has just gone right along with all this. We have filed several lawsuits against the EPA and DEP, taking the state to administrative court in Tallahassee several times, trying to get them to enforce the Clean Water Act. Right now, the NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council, and the Clean Water Network have a lawsuit in federal court against the EPA and DEP for not enforcing the Clean Water Act. We've been through these kind of things many times before, but I think maybe this law lawsuit does have some teeth in it, and we might get some results from it. Basically, the big companies take the money to the legislators and the senators and congressmen in Washington and in Tallahassee, and they pay their way. The laws are written to suit the polluters. That's how it works. I think we're going to have a revolution. I think people are going to have to get up in arms and really be mad and really tell that they're mad, and probably going to have to stop buying all these products from all these companies that are polluters. We're going to have massive boycotts of their products, not buy them. We can get along without a lot of this stuff that's on the market in the grocery stores and in the drug stores, everywhere that you go that these companies make these products and they sell them. The mill at home makes cellulose for disposable diapers, sanitary napkins, the cellulose that goes into sausage casings, and the cellulose that goes into ice cream. There's some of these things that are pretty much hard to not buy, and you don't know if it's a Procter & Gamble product or not, because they don't use the sun and the moon on their products anymore because they are so embarrassed and because so many people have started to boycott their products. And the same is true of all these other big companies that are polluting. The paper mills all over the United States and all over the world are polluting the water, contaminating the fish with dioxins, PCBs, all kinds of bad chemicals, and it's causing effects in the people's children and in the people themselves. People have high cancer rates. We have a high incidence of birth defects. There's a lot of lupus, a lot of liver cancer, a lot of liver problems in general, stomach problems that are sometimes cancer and sometimes other problems. All this is from even attention deficit disorders can be attributed to dioxin. Miscarriages, birth defects, there's just a whole list of things that we know now are caused by dioxin and Agent Orange. Even diabetes, they know now is caused by exposure to Agent Orange. So these are the same chemicals that are coming out of these paper mills and pulp mills that are so dangerous and that are ruining the environment. Up in Taylor County, we have two species of fish that are changing sex in the effluent in the river from the mill. We have three species of deformed insects. We have dioxin-contaminated fish. The aquifer, the Florida aquifer, where we all get our drinking water, is contaminated from the processes from the mill. The Gulf of Mexico is being polluted by the mill. There's about 20 square miles of dead seagrasses at the mouth of the Finn Holloway. And it's all caused by the effluent from the mill. And the fact is they use chlorine out there, chlorine and chlorine dioxide. And when you put chlorine and chlorine dioxide on organic matter, when they're cooking the pine trees to make these products, the cellulose for these products, that's what forms these bad chemicals. In Europe, they don't use chlorine and chlorine dioxide. Their disposable diapers are a light tan color. I don't see what's wrong with that. You know, they're going to get pretty dirty pretty quick anyway. The fact is that these companies have convinced us that if it's white, it's clean. But in the case of pulp and paper mills, if it's white, it's very contaminated. You wouldn't want to put that against your little baby's honey. I mean, that's just, you know, that has the products themselves have chemicals in them that you would not want exposed to your little baby's skin. There are ways to do this, and if I tell these paper mill guys, all you got to do is make a trip over to Europe and look at how they do it. They use a closed loop system. They only use about a third as much water in their processes. They don't dirty as much water, and the water that they do discharge then, what little bit they do discharge, because they use a closed loop system, they use it over and over and over again. And they don't have as nearly as many problems. The air pollution is not as bad either. Up in Taylor County, our air pollution, we're the 57th worst county in the nation for air pollution. I think that we have the third worst river in the U.S. now, the worst river in Florida. The DEP and EPA seem to think that the answer to all this is to let these mills, the one over at Pensacola, the one in Perry, and the one at Palatka, the Georgia-Pacific mill in Palatka, just build a pipe to a larger body of water. They've issued, the EPA and DEP have both issued permits to all three of these mills, the Champion Mill at Pensacola, the Buckeye Mill at Perry, and the Georgia-Pacific Mill at Palatka, to build a pipe each to a larger body of water. in Perry, they're going to be able to build one that's 19 miles long and pipe their effluent to the Gulf of Mexico. Because they can't meet the mixing standards, they don't have a large enough mixing zone, is what they say. And so they're just going to let them use dilution as a solution to pollution. And that was an idea that was okay back in the 40s, but is not okay now.
Mother Earth is calling you. Father Sky will soon be gone forever. We hear the eagles cry. We know the reason why. And now our fears are coming true.
Selagee Cherokee singer-songwriter Dave Trezek, featuring his CD title song, Save the Land. Dave gifted me his CD when I spoke at a powwow to benefit the beautiful Ocala National Forest that was threatened by plans of President Bush's administration's so-called Healthy Forest Initiative, which is a national policy to promote more logging of America's national forests. Dave is a charter member of the Defenders of the Oklawaha, which fights to protect the Oklawaha River from pollution. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yacht Kedisi Native Center. I'm your host, Ones Pritzker. In the studio with me is environmental activist Joy Ezell. She is spokesperson for HOPE, Help Our Polluted Environment, a community organization in what's now called North Florida. They are fighting a number of serious issues, such as a multinational paper company mill, PG&E's Buckeye plant, the air and water pollution, a proposed 800 megawatt coal-fired power plant, and the U.S. military's plan to locate a cruise missile bombing range in her area. These and other community issues have serious environmental, social, and economic impacts to a region that was once a very beautiful and biologically diverse ecosystem that sustained a rural cultural way of life. Joy, when you were speaking about the three paper mills in your region, Champion in Pensacola, Georgia Pacific in Palatka, and PG&E Buckeye Plant in your hometown of Perry, I was thinking about how powerful they are as multinational companies. They are able to dominate the politics and economy of whatever area they are located in, whether here in the United States or other parts of the world where they do business. In my Wabanaki homeland, now called the state of Maine, paper companies are the dominant force of power. They dictate land use and economic policy throughout the state. My friend Ralph Nader's classic book, The Paper Plantation, provides a good summary of forest industries in Maine, cut-and-run practices of raping the land. Another old friend of mine in Maine, Mitch Lansky, wrote a detailed book about paper companies and forest policy in the north woods of my sacred homeland, the Penobscot Watershed. His book is entitled Beyond the Beauty Strip. In the 1980s, he and I, with several other friends of mine, fought the Maine Forest Service and multinational paper companies in Maine in a group we called PEST, Protect the Environment Against Spray Toxins. When paper companies waged war on the spruce fir forest in a public relations campaign about the spruce budworm. If you examine this spray program, it was in actuality a way to justify faster timber cutting in order to boost profits at the expense of the forest. 100 trees an hour, 24 hours a day, was the rate of raping the woods. As a young boy, I remember when one could still take a drink of fresh water from the forest streams. I remember when we could eat fresh deer and moose before they and our fish relatives became poisoned from the paper mill pollution. I remember how healthy and beautiful the wild blueberry patches were, or the river fiddlehead ferns we ate as well, before our sacred watershed became contaminated. I remember when it was safe to eat our sacred plants, the corn, bean, and squash, from our organic gardens. Sadly, not anymore. It is no coincidence that Rachel Carson's classic book, Silent Spring, was written about my Wabanaki homeland, now called Maine. In Southeast Asia, in Central America, in Canada, and in different places in the United States, I have seen the devastation caused by forest industries, destruction of the forest, environmental health problems from their pollution, and socioeconomic impacts upon generations of families who worked in the woods or in the mills, not to mention violations of Occupational Safety Health Act OSHA regulations, and threatening anyone trying to promote a forest industry union like our Maine Woodsmen's Alliance. Paper companies, as part of the American forest industry, exert tremendous influence, both in state and federal government policy. The weakening of environmental laws such as the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, Toxic Substances Control Act, Endangered Species Act, National Environmental Protection Act, and the National Forest Policy Act have occurred largely from lobbying of forest industries. Many former forest and agribusiness executives are now top officials in President Bush's administration. As example, the chief of the U.S. Forest Service was a chief executive officer of one of the largest paper companies. Internationally, forest companies are just as bad, if not worse. Most so-called third world countries have no or minimal environmental laws. Most less developed nations do not have the finances or administrative capacity to monitor and enforce forest policy or conservation regulations. I know about this from my experience as a Peace Corps forestry advisor in Southeast Asia, as well as having attended a number of world forestry conferences. Deforestation, one of the most serious environmental problems of our planet, is largely due to the excessive and unsustainable logging of the world's forests by the forest industry. Joy, my question to you relates to my commentary here especially how multinational companies like PG&E, who does business in over 80 countries, who makes millions of dollars, often goes to great lengths to hide their operations. The PG&E paper plant in your hometown disguises their parent-company relationship by calling it the Buckeye Mill, for example. Would you please let our worldwide listeners hear about their economic shell game and how they created a kind of dummy company of investors to run their Florida operation?
When I was able to get CNN to come down and do a story about the mill and the river, it was called The Smell of Money. That was in 1992. And Procter & Gamble has always owned this mill at Perry. It was formerly called the Buckeye Cellulose Corporation. When they first came to Perry, they called it the Buckeye Cotton Oil Company, which made the local people think that it was going to be something to do with agriculture, some sort of a cotton farming kind of a thing. Well, it didn't have anything to do with cotton at all. It was a prototype for a pulp mill, and they built a very small one to start off with and tested the process to see if they could make it work. And when they got the designation of the river as an industrial river, then there was no holds barred. They could put anything in it they wanted to put, and they didn't have to go by any kind of restrictions whatsoever as to what kind of chemicals and waste that they could dump into the river. What happened then in 1992, when CNN came and did the program called The Smell of Money, shortly after that they did another one called What Price White Paper, and about that time is when the big Procter & Gamble sign came down from in front of the mill, and they changed it back to Buckeye, which they had been calling it for years, back until about in the 80s they started calling it Procter & Gamble again. I guess they thought that nobody was noticing and that they could just kind of keep on getting away with it, but when it was on national television it pretty much embarrassed them. So they tried to sell the mill. In fact, they tried to sell all of their mills in the U.S. because it was so embarrassing to them, the What Price Price Paper program especially. So they tried to sell all their mills, and they could not sell the one in Perry. Weyerhaeuser bought all the other ones, and Weyerhaeuser's another bad player in the pulp and paper industry, but they bought all the other mills except the one in Perry. So what was Procter & Gamble to do? They formed this investor group made up of some of their former retired vice presidents. Now, there was no money changed hand in this kind of a thing. It was just basically a shell game. In the paperwork that's in the courthouse in Perry, it says that this investor group was going to take over 49% of the management of the mill. Now, that leaves me to question, what about the other 51%? Well, basically, Procter & Gamble still controls the mill. The management of the mill is actually more controlled by Procter & Gamble than it is these retired vice presidents. It was just a way to get the big name off the front of the mill and to divorce themselves from any liability, from any of the lawsuits that the people might file for their ailments, for their health, for the quality of the water, for their property value, all this kind of thing, so that the mill would, and Procter & Gamble could get away from the liability. And paper mills do this all over the world. They find a way to get away from the liability that the people can sue them for and finally get some justice from. And I see them falling in the line all doing this. The ones that are left in the U.S., thank God a lot of them have closed down. The problem with it is that they're moving to South America now. Yeah. The forests down there are being cut, and they are clear-cutting, just like they've been doing here in the U.S. for a long time. They don't use selective cutting. It's not sustainable forestry here in the U.S., and what they're doing in South America is a real shame. And they're doing this all over the world, not just in North America and South America, in Russia. Every place where a pine tree or any kind of tree that will grow that they can make paper from, they're doing the same thing. And they're causing pollution. They're creating dioxin. Same thing as Agent Orange. Same chemical. They are polluting the fish so that the people who eat fish and sustain their lives with fish are being affected. And I just think it's a real shame. I don't think it's right. And I will fight forever to try to get this thing righted.
are listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kitichi Native Center. Yat Kitichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center is an intertribal culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat Kitichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their worldviews in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat Kitichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing Indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat Kitichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat Kitichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yat Kitichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yat Kitichi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yat Kitichi's Kinanwatakwisi Native Arts creates quality handcrafted traditional and contemporary fine arts. Please request our catalog of custom flutes, pottery, beaded necklaces, bracelets, earrings, leather pouches, hat bands, and chokers with bone. Yat Kitichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Please write us for our catalog of audio tapes available for purchase. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yat Kitichi Native Center, write to Yat Kitichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Yat Kitichi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinawatakwisin, to all of our relations.
Been right.
from Native American singer-songwriter Cody Winterhawk from his CD, Winterhawk, Long Time Coming. That was a very beautiful song entitled Walk in Honor. And we also featured a very fine traditional drum song from the Bear Creek Singers and the Scissortail Singers off their CD, When Worlds Collide, which was the title song that we featured, and that is from their fine records, Wakinyayan Records, in Drum Top Productions. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Native Radio. Please stay tuned next week when we continue my conversation in part two with Joy Ezell, environmental community and peace activist, who represents a very fine organization, Hope Help Our Polluted Environment. And if you want to find out more about the subjects that we discussed this evening, you can check out Hope's website. That's hopeforcleanwater@yahoogroups.com. Or you can also do a Google search and type in, say, Taylor County, Florida residents. Both websites give more background and information on what we were talking about tonight, the PG&E Buckeye paper mill, the proposed 800-megawatt coal-fired power plant, U.S. military plans to locate a cruise missile bombing range in her area, as well as other environmental issues like the pollution of the Gulf of Mexico and other watershed systems. We're going to conclude with music from a very fine CD entitled Song for Humanity, and this is from Peter Cater and R. Carlos Nakai's collection. The particular song is going to be in honor of Hinmatun Laket, more commonly known as Chief Joseph Rolling Thunder in the Mountains was his name. And, of course, he was the Inipu or Nez Perce warrior who tried to protect his people from the U.S. Army cavalry who chased them through the Bitterroot Mountains. And Chief Joseph once was quoted as saying, "The earth is the mother of all people, and all people should have equal rights upon it." And Chief Joseph also said, quote, "It does not require many words to speak the truth," unquote. Until the next Wolf Mountain Native Radio, this is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker, thanking you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Aho, Kinon One Takwasin, to all of our relations. Thank you.
way.